Listen live on the BBC Sounds app.
Fantastic track, 1989 that was released, from the album When the World Knows Your Name. After all these years, it still sounds amazing. And that leads me nicely onto my first guest. With Deacon Blue, he has made some of the most magnificent music of the last 40 years. They've sold millions of records, had countless hits and albums, and they always sound like Deacon Blue. That's the best compliment I can let you go. You put it on, you go, that's a Deacon Blue record. But he's here to tell us about his first memoir, Walking Back Home. Ricky Ross, welcome.
Good morning. Well, good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon now. We've just gone past 12.
Yeah.
And isn't it a beautiful day?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Absolutely.
It's really gorgeous. It's lovely to be in London.
Yeah. So Walking Back Home celebrates 40 years of you doing this.
And surviving.
And presumably your years leading up to starting in the business. And
yeah, because I was one of these people that I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, like lots of people.
Most people in this business,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, and I think the thing that drove me when I started was the fact every time I got into a room with a piano I sort of sat down and wrote a song. Now, I wasn't sure what all these songs were for.
What age were you when this was
happening? So I was at college. I was training to be a teacher. And maybe the last days of what would have been 6 years at school kind of was I started. I met a guy who played guitar, and he said, that's called E, and that's called, you know, E flat and all that kind of thing, because these are chords. And so when I started down to play music, I just ventured towards songs. The great Michael Marra, who was a great inspiration to me, Dundee's singer-songwriter, who is probably a national hero, sadly gone, he always said he wanted his name in brackets, not in lights, you know, and that was what, you know, I think that's what drove me.
You didn't want the fame?
Well, I didn't know about the fame, really. No, I had no idea what... So the only thing I could think of was I wanted my song to come out. I wanted someone to hear it.
Yeah.
And the only way for someone to hear it was someone to record it. And when I first got a publishing deal, eventually, you know, it's like 1985, I sort of said to them all, I don't care who, you know, who does the songs. And they said, well, who do you think's going to do them, kind of thing. And so that was what kind of, you know, pushed me forward.
So what made you think, right, now is the time to write a memoir?
Or to do a memoir? You know, it started probably in the best way, because if you start by saying I want to do a book, I think it can be a bit deadly. I started the last Deacon Blue record called City of Love. We had a song called On Love. And in it, I sort of went towards all these old stories, one of which was about my grandfather. Now, right. My grandfather was this amazing character. I loved him. He looked after me, and he and my grandmother often looked after me before I went to school. And I thought, am I really going to just let him go there in two lines? You know, one line about his house, one line about him shaving, one line about us going on holiday. There's so much more to him. I'd love to tell his story. So I just started writing. I started writing about him. I started writing about a guy that lived around the corner from us. I started writing about the people that we grew up with in little chapters. I had no idea where they were going.
Yeah.
And they were just all over the shop, you know, just in terms of chronology. And that's how it started.
Have you got a good memory? Or did you keep a diary?
Yeah,
because the idea of sitting down and remembering what I was doing 30, 40 years ago, I can't remember anything.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think I do. My mom used to say, I would come up with stories with her. And I said, do you remember so-and-so? Well, you've got a good memory. And I said, I don't think I do. It's just that I'm really bringing up the stuff that I remember. I think there's a load of stuff that you forget. But you remember the things that happened. You know, you remember significant events. You know, say, for example, an adult in the room changed their behaviour, or something unusual happened with someone. I think you remember these events, and you remember when people have been kind, and you remember things that were just amazing, amazing things that happened to you.
But then a lot of your songs are biographical, so they will, if you go back and look at the old songs, you go, oh, I remember why I wrote this.
Do you know what's a bit like, Michael? It's like on your phone now, you remember, what year was that? And you go back on your photographs and you go, oh, that, right, it was 2017.
Thank goodness.
But songs, you're right, songs were a little, if I think back to where I was when I wrote that song, that kind of sometimes helps. And all the chapters allude to songs, song titles.
Right. So which is more satisfying? Writing the book, writing the new album? Because there's an album that's coming out with this, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Well, the new album is a sort of sequel to Short Stories 1. It's called Short Stories 2.
Clever. Clever use. I mean, that's why he's the writer we love.
And I was almost going to call the book Short Stories, but my publisher said, well, actually, people will get the wrong idea. It might be a short stories book. But writing the album was sort of simultaneous, because sometimes there's a big story in the book about my mum and her really last days, and there's a story about my mum after she passed away, and so there's a lot of that going on. Yeah. The two kind of bleed into each other, and when I do a live show, it's just me and a piano, a little bit of guitar, and an audience, and you tell these stories and you sing the songs, and that's all that happens. So the album is a bit like that.
So did you find that it would be a catalyst? You'd be writing a chapter, reliving these memories, and then a song idea would come to you?
Yeah, because actually a lot of it was in lockdown time, would you believe?
Of course.
Actually, Lorraine, my wife, was... I think I had COVID first, she had COVID second, and she was upstairs.
Fun, isn't it? Yeah. Really good fun there in that.
She was isolating, and I was kind of like downstairs, and there was no one else about, so I had a little studio downstairs, so I'd write the song, and I would just do a take, you know, I'd do a take maybe 10 o'clock at night, maybe 11 o'clock at night, until I got it right. Then I'd listen in the morning and think, oh, you know, I'll do one more. But that's how the album came about. I didn't go any other I couldn't go to any other studio because we were just housebound.
Yeah, you couldn't do it. Yeah. I'm thinking back, though, to when Deacon Blue exploded onto the scene, and you were huge, you were everywhere. But the Scottish music at that time, I'm just trying to think who would, you know, okay, Fairground Attraction, Wet, 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 A Hue and Cry, Texas. I mean, it was a massive scene.
Danny Wilson, there were.
Yeah, of course, Danny Wilson. Yeah. A massive scene. Did you all know each other? Did you all influence each other?
Well, Fairground Attraction came out in 2002 with us, which was lovely.
What a voice.
Yeah, Eddie's got a fantastic voice. And Mark's a fantastic songwriter.
Yeah.
They came out on tour, and they they had the cheek to go to number one while they were the humble support act, which is, you know...
It happens.
Yeah, but it was great, because it was such a buzz just watching what was happening to them. Hue and Cry, good friends with Pat and Greg. And, of course, the Danny Wilson guys are from my hometown of Dundee. Mm. And Jed now plays with Simple Minds, who are also great friends. We played with Simple Minds. Simple Minds were the kind of... They were the kings and queens. They were the ones that we all went, oh, wow, they've really set the barrier high. And they'd done everything. Everyone said, well, Simple Minds did this, you know. And it was lovely, because we played with Simple Minds a few weeks ago at Blenheim Palace.
They're doing the Leeds...
Oh, they're doing it for you too.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Just the best people.
Yeah, and it's the thing. It's what I was saying at the beginning of this. You put on one of your records, you put on one of theirs, you instantly know who it is, and it's still great music now. It's still relevant. It's still...
Well, I think... Well, you know about songs, Michael. I mean, that's your currency. You know, and a song, you'll sing Cole Porter songs, and you'll sing, I guess you must sing Bacharach and David songs, you must sing that songbook. And you know... A song's a song's a song. It's a good song. It's still a great song. Even dare I say it, I remember a few years ago we did a Scottish songbook thing, and I found an old song of Sir Harry Lauder's.
Which one?
It was called... I can't remember the title. It was about the First World War, right. About sending the laddies home. And it was so emotional, so beautiful, because he was a songwriter.
Yeah.
And, you know, Robert Burns was a songwriter. We come of that great tradition of songwriting. So a song is still going to be a great song. If it was ever a good song, it's going to be a good song.
Do you know when you've done one and you go, actually, this is one of the better ones?
Well, I hope I know, but I've got an editor that lives in the house.
Yes, you have. What the hell is this?
She's very good at, you know, if she stays by, there's a radiator at my door in my studio, and if she hangs around and we're doing the demo and she stays for 5 minutes, I think, oh, this is good. And if she leaves quickly and goes to walk the dog suddenly, I think maybe not.
Is it fun working Start together again? So closely?
It's great.
It must be.
Lorraine and I came together for music, and she's got fantastic... You know, we talk about music, we love music. I recently introduced her to Self Esteem after Glastonbury, and she's just obsessed with that go-through, and she's got a blasting. She is...
I thought you meant you gave her Self Esteem.
No, the artist.
What have you been doing for the last few years? Downtrodden in this moment.
Have some Self Esteem.
Have some Self Esteem.
No, the artist. But, you know, she, once you find things, she loves them. But she's very, very good. And she will say, I'm not a songwriter, but I do know this. I know a song... And by the way, you need this. And would you go back and think about that?
That is songwriting, though. Well, that's song editing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's really important. And one of the things, fun enough, about the book was great for me, and someone was asking me what made a difference. I had a great editor, a lovely guy called Richard Roper, who was so good at just encouraging me when I wasn't sure about things, but also saying, actually, leave that out, or let's have a bit more of that. And it's... Everyone needs an editor.
Tell me about it. In every area of life, actually, if we're being perfectly honest. So have you got the bug? Is there another book in you?
Oh, I'm so glad.
You're on the treadmill.
I'm so glad to get this out, because, you know, we've been talking about it, and it's all right. And now the family are... One of my daughters is on holiday. She's reading it, and so far, so good. But, you know, that way you might get...
You didn't let them read it first?
I did. I said to them. And Lorraine said to me, oh, I'll read it when you get the proper print. I said, you might want to read it before then. I don't like reading it on the computer. I'll wait till it's printed.
Do you know, Kathy's exactly the same. She went... Something she goes, no, when it's finished. I don't want to see a half-finished book.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah, so there could be trouble ahead. yeah. No, my sister's reading it tonight, and my cousin sent me a lovely, lovely note. He's a dear friend to me, Sue, sent me a lovely note. She'd finished it this morning, and she was enjoying it. So far, I haven't offended anyone in the family. So here's what... you never know.
Good luck.
Thank you, Michael.
You might not be walking back home. That is the name of the book, Walking Back Home. Ricky, a joy. We're talking about brilliant songwriting. Doesn't get much better than this one. A bit of dignity.
Thank you.
That goes with the self-esteem. Cheers, Ricky. Lovely to talk to you, mate.
There's a man I meet, walks up our street. He's a worker for the council, has been 20 years. And he takes no lip of nobody and litter off the gutter. Puts it in the bag and never thinks to mutter. And he packs his lunch in the Sunday's bag. The children call him Boogie. He never lets on, but I know because he once told me. He let me know a secret about the money in his kitty. He's gonna buy a dinghy, gonna call her Dignity. And I'll sail her on the west coast, through villages and towns. I'll be on my holidays, they'll be doing the rounds. They'll ask me how I got her, I'll say, I saved my money. They say, isn't she pretty? That she called Dignity. And I'm telling this story in a faraway sea, sipping down raki and reading Maynard Keynes. And I'm thinking about home and all that that means, and a place in the winter for Dignity. And I'll sail up the west coast, through villages and towns. I'll be on my holidays, they'll be doing the rounds. They'll ask me how I got a house. I save my money. I say, isn't she pretty? That ship called Dignity.
Fantastic song, Dignity, Deacon Blue. Lovely talking to Ricky. And as I say, his book, Walking Back Home, is out now. I guess family album time again.